we start from 65 and onwards. Yesterday, or day before yesterday, we discussed about why this section is the conclusion of the Gita. We discussed how the superlatives paramam vachaha and guhyatamam together with ishtosime drudhamiti and hitkame, all these four superlatives in 64 indicate emphasis that is unprecedented in the full Gita. Nearest that we have is 10.1, where there is paramam vachaha and there is hitkameya. But both paramam vachaha, the supreme syllables, muhyatamam, most confidential knowledge, dearly loved by me. In fact, the idea of dearly loved by me is unprecedented in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, there Krishna does say that, ebhajantu ma bhaktamaita vishyapteham, and he says that my devotees will not perish. But the emphasis on speaking this so emphatically is unprecedented in the Gita, and that indicates what is going to come afterwards is the highest. So, manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosi me. So again, we see the affection of Krishna for Arjuna and through Arjuna for all living beings when he is repeating the same words to give the instruction. But he is the love aspect. Krishna's love for all of us, for Arjuna, is coming out more emphatically. Over 9.34, the same verse is there, but the C and D part are different. Manmanabha madbhakto madhyaji mamnuskuru mame vaishyasi yuktvaivam te atmanam matparayanaha. So there, the emphasis is on what the devotee should do by which that devotee will return back to me. Mame vaishyasi, you will come to me. Yuktvaivam atmanam matparayanaha. So the whole idea is there is a promise over there. You do this and you will come back to me. So even a promise is an expression of love. And if you do this, I will give you this. The parents may say this. If you come first in there, if you do well in your exams, then I'll take you here and there. I'll take you to this place. So that's a promise. So promise itself is an expression of love. But additionally, in this particular way, Krishna is telling that I'm not only giving you a promise as a businessman may give a promise to another businessman. Here Krishna is telling that this is the truth. Temte pratijane priyosime. You are dear to me. So the previous verse also had an expression of endearment. Ishtosime drudhamiti rato vakshamite. Ishtosime drudhamiti was there. Here again it is. Pratijane priyosime. You are very dear to me. Now, in 9.31, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhaktaha pranashyati. So there Krishna had used the word pratijanihi. Pratijanihi means to declare. You declare that my devotee will never perish. So there, in order to reassure the world that his devotee will be protected, Krishna wants to use Arjuna's word, because he knows how dear, he knows that people may doubt his word sometimes, but his devotee's word he always keeps that. But here Krishna wants to assure Arjuna himself directly. And that's why he is saying the same word he called upon Arjuna to use, pratijani, you declare. Here Krishna is saying, I declare it. Pratijane priyosime. I declare that you are very dear to me. So priyosime. So you know, in movies sometimes the hero and heroine may declare loudly, I love you, I love you, I love you, and they will have echoes coming from all directions. I love you, I love you. You know, something like that. So that is a dramatized version of the mundane love. But here, these two verses are essentially an expression of Krishna's love and a call for our love. So Krishna has expressed his love in 64 and he's also expressing it in 65. And he says, Pratijane Priyosime. And 65 and 66 are actually asking us to express our love. We discussed these four points, actually how they refer to offering our entire being to Krishna. Manmana is think of me. Madbhakta is offer your heart to me. So Our mind may wander here and there, even when our heart is at one particular place. Still the mind wanders. Krishna offers offer both the mind and the heart. Madhyaji Maam Namaskuru. So Madhyaji means worship me, and also Namaskuru refers to the bodily aspect. Physical aspect. Namaskar is done physically with the body. And Madhyaji is to offer the to offer homage, Prabhupada translated. That means to make me as the object of reverence, the ultimate object of worship. So in this way, Krishna is making a call to Arjuna to offer his, to make him the supreme object of love. That Arjuna should make Krishna the supreme object of love. And Srila Prabhupada takes this purport to explain how we should fix the mind on Krishna. Man comes so many times. So the idea is we should fix the mind on Krishna, and Krishna is all attractive. So his beauty, when we meditate on, then that enables us to become attracted to him and attracted away from the things of the world. Now at this particular point, we know the context was in 63, Krishna has told Arjuna, I have finished, now you decide what you want to do. But then when seeing Arjuna lost deep in thought, Krishna wants to make things simpler and clearer for him. And that's why he says, I'll speak the highest knowledge to you. And when he says, I'll speak the highest knowledge, then he speaks this manmana. Still the question may remain in Arjuna's mind, there are so many other duties. You're saying that I should just think of you.
So let's go on to 18.66. Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma shuchaha. Now in the previous verse, Krishna has told Arjuna that you fix your mind on me, you become my devotee. And the verse before that, Krishna has said that this is the highest knowledge that I am going to give to me. But still, there are so many other activities that Krishna has talked about. So many other paths, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga. So what about all those other paths? Are they to be given up? What should Arjuna do about them? So addressing that doubt of Arjuna, Krishna speaks this verse, which Ramacharya has called the Charam Shloka of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Sarva Dharman Parityajya. So give up all other varieties of religion and just surrender to me. Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Just surrender unto me. Now this is a often quoted verse, but it has to be very carefully understood. There are many deep aspects of this verse. So firstly, let's start with each line one by one. Dharman parityajya. Sarva dharman parityajya. Now we often use the word dharma to refer to, at least Prabhupada does it, to refer to the intrinsic nature, the essential inalienable characteristic. So we said the dharma of all living beings is to love and serve. Now, that is definitely one meaning of dharma, but that is not the only meaning of dharma. If that meaning were the only meaning, then this verse would not make sense. So, sarva dharman parityajya, give up all religions, so if dharma were nature, then give up your nature. That which is inalienable, how can we give it up? So, therefore, here the word dharma has some other meaning, and that meaning is, actually, sarva dharma also refers to duty. You know, duty is something which we all do, and the word dharma is often used in that sense. This is ye mera dharma hai. This is my duty. So Krishna is saying, yes, all of you may have many other conceptions of duty, but give up all those conceptions and just surrender unto me. Now Krishna has also earlier said that dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge, that he has come to establish dharma. Then again he is telling that now I am telling you to give up dharma. So first of all, the idea over here, sarva dharman parityajya, means that give up all varieties of dharma so that you can follow the supreme dharma of surrendering unto me. Mamekam sharanam rajam. So Krishna has also used the word dharma in that last verse of the 12th chapter. कि धर्मामृतमिदं यथोक्तं परिपासते.
सोम श्रद्धाना मत परमा भक्तास्ते तीव मे प्रियः.
प्रत्यक्ष अवगमम धर्मम आल्सो ही इज यूज्ड इन 9.2. So in those contexts, dharma refers to bhakti, and there he is talking about it in terms of the supreme dharma. So the idea is not that you give up dharma and become irreligious, but give up lower forms of dharma so that you can embrace the highest form of dharma, that is surrender unto me. Mamekam sharanam rajam. Now, just sarvadharman parityajya doesn't lead to spiritual advancement. It is mamekam sharanam braja that leads to spiritual advancement. Prabhupada explains that even the hippies had done sarvadharman parityajya. They had given up their duties to family, to society, to our education. They had even given up morality. But it was only when they got the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, Mamekam Sharanam Raja, then that led to tangible spiritual advancement for them. So, Sarvadharman Parityajya is not an isolated instruction. It is the background for the essential instruction of Mamekam Sharanam Raja. So, as I was saying, the word dharma refers not only to inalienable nature, but it also refers to our duty. Now, at the highest, purest level in the spiritual world, our natural duty is also our desire. Normally we say the words duty and desire conflict with each other. There's something which I want to do, that we call as my desires, and something which I have my duty to do. So for example, say doing a job, earning a livelihood, maybe taking care of elderly family members, may feel this is my duty. But then there's something which I desire. Maybe my pursuing my hobbies or those people whom I love and I want to spend time with them, doesn't be my desires. At the purest level, there is no conflict between our duty and our desires. When to serve Krishna is our duty, but when we are pure, our desire is also to serve Krishna only. So in that sense, at the highest level, when we are pure in the spiritual world, the dharma, the two meanings of the dharma, that which is our duty and that which is our nature, they become identical. Now in the conditioned stage, when we are here in the material world, when our nature is somewhat distorted by our conditionings, at that time, those activities that help us to rise to the highest level of dharma, to the purity, to the pure level of wanting to serve Krishna, selflessly and unconditionally, that is called as dharma. So all those activities that will reinstate us in our pure platform, they are called as dharma. So in that context, the word dharma refers to not just our a nature, but our duties that enable us to return back to that nature. And this dharma, as given in the Vedic scriptures, is multi-level. Now there may be, there, as you know, there is Kshatriya Dharma, there is Vaishya Dharma, there is Brahmachari Dharma, there is Sannyasa Dharma, there is Grahastha Dharma. So there are all the, so according to one's Varana and one's Ashrama, one's social and spiritual positions, one has particular duties. And those duties are all progressively meant to take us to the highest platform of surrendering to Krishna. Of the purely loving Krishna, of becoming reinstated in our original nature as pure servants of Krishna. So these duties are multi-level, and for Arjuna there was a conflict between the Kshatriya Dharma and the Kula Dharma. That was the defining conflict. Kshatriya Dharma said that he had to fight whatever happens. Kula Dharma says that he has to protect his family members whatever happens. So which dharma has to be followed, which is dharma is higher? In a sense, the Bhagavad Gita's message till now has been that focus on your varana dharma, don't be attached to your relatives, they are anyway going to die, and at a spiritual level they are all souls, they are not going to die. So at a material level you can't stop their death, and at a spiritual level to think that they will die is ignorance. On the other hand, all of us
we realize our spiritual identity and become liberated by doing our duty. So therefore, do your Kshatriya Dharma. So that's why previously in this chapter on 18.45 was Shriyan, so Dharma Viguna, Paradharma, so Nishtitat. That to do one's prescribed duties is better than to do another's duties. So Arjuna wanted to give up the Kshatriya Dharma and take up the Brahmana Dharma of becoming non-violent. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, don't do that. That was the whole gist of this chapter earlier, when Krishna was talking about Varnashram Dharma. But here Krishna is telling, okay, Kshatriya Dharma and Kula Dharma, they are both dharmas, but right now what I am telling you, give up both of them. And just surrender into the Imam Ekam Sharana Praja. So earlier the impetus for Arjuna to fight was that he was a Kshatriya, and Krishna reinforced that. But at this point Krishna is telling, you fight because I am telling you to fight. For no other reason. If I am telling you to fight, fight. So that's the highest dharma for Imam Ekam Sharanam Raja. So Ekam, me alone, is for my pleasure. That is the paradharma which you take up. So Ipumsam Parodharma Yatur Bhakti Radhokshiji. So there is paradharma and aparadharma. So Kshatriya Dharma may be higher than a Kula Dharma, but higher than both Kula Dharma and Kshatriya Dharma is the Bhakti Dharma, the Vaishnava Dharma of pure devotional service to Krishna. Follow that. And by that you will be protected. Now, Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. When Krishna talks about surrendering to him. So, Prabhupada quotes in the purport from Hari Bhakta Vilas to explain what is surrender. And Sharanam. Often we think of Sharanagati in passive terms. Okay, hands up. Okay, I surrender. So we think of Sharanagati as passive. But here, Sharanagati is described in six activities, which are six aspects of Sharanagati. And the first two of these are activities. The remaining four are described as qualities. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishteti vishwaso gotritve varanam tatha atmanikshepa karpanye shadvidha sharanagatihi. So the first two are accept that which is favorable, reject that which is unfavorable. So this is actually dynamic. It's like if a person is making stock investments, and the person is constantly monitoring the movement of the stock markets. That person is observing, okay, the prices here are going down. Maybe I should sell this out. Or if this is just a transitional phase, then afterward the prices are going to increase. So maybe I should invest over here. And the prices over there are going up. Maybe I can sell over here and I can get more money. Or maybe the prices will go up in the future. This company is doing well. So maybe I should invest more. So there are no fixed necessary patterns of what to do if the prices go up or prices go down. But the person is constantly observing and is thinking, you know, what will be favorable for my financial interests. And that, whatever is financially favorable, I'll do that. And whatever is unfavorable, I will avoid that. I'll give it up. In a sense, these two are the characteristics that underlie all activity that we do. You know, if a batsman is playing cricket, then the person will say, who is the bowler that is coming? Okay, this is a very good bowler. I have to be very careful. So you may think that you have to be very careful while playing with him. So you may just be watchful and defensive. And then after that another bowler comes up. And they say, oh, this is a rookie. I can just take him out and hit him for sixes and fours and score a lot of runs what I couldn't score in the previous over. So you observe, okay, what is favorable, what is unfavorable. So good bowler is unfavorable, so respond in a different way. Low quality bowler is favorable, so respond in a different way. So this is how we actually actively discriminate in doing all our activities. So similarly, here it is said that we differentiate while doing our emotional while practicing our spiritual life also, what is anukul to my bhakti, what is pratikul to my bhakti, and accordingly accept or reject. So for example, if I am chanting japa or attending class, and I find myself feeling sleepy. So at that time, if I just lean against a wall, then that is pratikul to my bhakti, because by that I will doze off. So then I will not do that. On the other hand, if I just walk maybe stand up or walk, or maybe just go and sprinkle some water on my face, then I can wake up again and I can be more attentive. So that is anukul to my bhakti. I'll accept that. So this same principle applies to so many other fields. In every devotional activity that we do, there are certain things which, small things, if we adjust, we can do it better. And there are certain small things, if we don't adjust, if we neglect, or if we do the opposite, then it may make things worse for us. So this brings a sense of dynamism to bhakti. This idea of anukulyasya sankalpa bhakti kulyasya varjanam. Because if we think of sharanagati in terms of total surrender to Krishna's will, then that often seems very lofty for us. How can I surrender to Krishna's will? And if surrender is defined as what Krishna has told in the earlier verse, manmanabho madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So always think of, that's impossible for me. And we may accept sharanagati as an exalted principle, but an impractical principle. And we may not be able to practice it. But at our level, doing anukulya sankalpa bhakti kulya svarjanam is always possible for us. And by that, we will move towards which is a surrender at our level, we will move towards higher levels of surrender. So this applies to also the sangha that we take, the books that we read, the schedules that we follow, the services that we take up. Ultimately, devotional service, making spiritual advancement, is our responsibility. The spiritual master does take the responsibility for us to take us back to Godhead, but it's a cooperative responsibility. We have to cooperate with him, and cooperating with him is following his instructions, and following his instructions means being intelligent, because we will have to use this intelligence from Guru Sadhu Shastra to understand what is favorable and what is unfavorable for our bhakti. And then after that, the remaining four are described as more in terms of feelings that talk about Goptutve Varanam Tata Atmanikshepaka. So it is Rakshishati Iti Vishwasa, that Krishna will always protect me. Now, we may not have that faith at this stage, but even by doing the favorable and unfavorable activity properly, we are in one sense expressing our faith to Krishna. And by doing these activities, or we will see how Krishna protects us, then our faith will increase more and more. Rakshishati Iti Vishwasa. So that confidence that Krishna is going to protect, and Goptrutve Varanam Tata. That's one is when there is danger, Krishna will protect me. Goptrutve is that Krishna is a maintainer. Actually, it is not only in danger that Krishna protects me, he is always maintaining me. He is my eternal sustainer. And Atmanikshepa Karpanya. Atmanikshep is I am helpless without Krishna. And Karpanya is I am the feeling of humility. So these are feelings, and we can try to cultivate these feelings, but in general, doing actions is easier than cultivating feelings. And gradually, by doing the right actions, the feelings will also come. So in this way, Sharanagati is not made abstract, but it is rendered concrete by these six aspects of Sharanagati. Now, Mam Ekam Sharanam, Mam Ekam is not to any other demigods, it's only to me. And now one word is often misconstrued by some people. It is Vraja. So a common translation of the word Vraja is to go. And some translators try to use it to say that actually Krishna is telling that there is some higher truth beyond me. And it is to that higher truth that you have to go by surrendering. Now if that meaning were valid, then there has to be some indication in the Gita of what that higher truth is, and some indication even in the context. Krishna has just very clearly said that what he is going to tell is the highest truth. And in the previous verse, he has used man, man, man several times. Man manabha mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishatyante pratijani priyosime. So ma me mam comes 6 times. Twice in 65a, twice in 65b, once in 65c. And once in 65D, May. Yani Priyosi May. So, after such an emphasis on Mama, and then after that, in this verse also, that Vraja, go is sandwiched between two Mams. Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, and then after that, Aham Tvam Sarva Pape Bhyo. mokshayishyami. So if Krishna would have been referring to Arjuna that you have to surrender to some other truth beyond me, then it is that truth will protect him from sinful reactions. Why? So if there is something beyond Krishna, then first you surrender to Krishna and then go somewhere else, and then when we go somewhere else, again it is Krishna who is going to protect us. It doesn't make sense logically from the context of the verse. So the idea that Vraja means something beyond is not correct over there. Something beyond Krishna, go somewhere else. But then what does the word Vraja mean? You know, the word Vraja, if you look at Sanskrit, it does not necessarily always have to mean go. It basically means movement. And there has some sort of movement which can be to or fro. But even if we say that, so in that sense, would you just come and surrender to me? But even if we use the word Vraja, there are other meanings of the word Vraja apart from go also. The word Vraja, as we know, refers to Vrindavan, Vrajadham. And Vishwanathaswami Thakur explains especially that this verse is also referring to the gopis. So Krishna, when he is talking here about Vrindavan, he's talking about pure devotional service, and he's talking about constantly thinking about him. He is talking about giving up all varieties of religion and surrendering to him. He's naturally remembering those who have done this surrender in the highest possible way. And that is Vrijavasi devotees, and especially among them, the gopis. So the gopis have surrendered to Krishna completely. When Krishna played the flute and he called the gopis, the gopis practice sarva dharma antrityajamam ekam sharanam. They gave up their duties to all their other family members. Pati sutanvaya bhatra bandhavan ati vilanghyate atyachyutagataha. So all our relatives, we have left them. Ati bilanghyate, that although they try to stop us, we went beyond the obstacle. Anti achyuta gataha, O Lord Achyuta, we have come to you. And gati vidastava udgita mohitaha. How we have come? Because udgita mohitaha, the loud sound of your flute has attracted us. Krishna's flute, he plays it very sweetly and softly. But still, by the mystical arrangement of Yoga Maya, even for long, long distances, that flute is heard. And because it is the call of love, even the softest sound appears extremely loud. So we are saying udgita mohitaha, you know, whatever the other family members were talking, whatever they were talking, when Krishna's flute sound came, they forgot it all, and just that sound became the most prominent sound echoing in their minds and hearts, and it attracted them, pulled them towards the forest. So now when the gopis left, they did not know what would happen to their future lives, you know, or what would happen to their honor, what would happen to their position in family, whether what their family members would say eventually when they would return. They didn't even know whether they would return or not. That time was just sarva dharman pratyajamame ekam sharanam vraja. But Shukadeva Goswami describes towards the end of the Rasalila pastime that Krishna, by his yogamaya potency, arranged that some shadow forms of the gopis were there with their family members, because of which they did not understand. They did, although initially they felt that the gopis are leaving us and going away, but next morning when the gopis came back, the family members felt that they are just coming from somewhere else in the house itself, some nearby area, because the shadow forms were there somewhere nearby in the vicinity, and that made the family members feel that they were actually, they had not gone anywhere. So in that sense, their family life was not disrupted, but it continued on. So that protection came for them. But at that time, the gopis did not know that the protection was going to come. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that just as the gopis surrendered, so Arjuna, remember the mood of Vraja. Amam ekam sharanam Vraja. So go mentally to Vraja and remember the gopis, and by their example surrender. The surrender that I am asking from you is not greater than what they have surrendered. For a woman to risk her chastity, risk her honor, is the greatest risk. It is the greatest loss in a cultured society, the loss of chastity. But the gopis did that for my sake. So if you have to give up your kula dharma for my sake, if you have to kill your family members, then remember the mood of Raja and do that. Mam ekam sharanam Raja. So sometimes when we practice devotional service, for example, if somebody becomes a brahmachari, then there is the pitra, there is the dharma to the ancestors, to the forefathers. We have to follow that and say they get progeny by which the lineage goes on. That is considered to be duty to the ancestors, and we have duty to our parents. Now those duties are important, and as much as possible we should follow them. But sometimes, if somebody wants to renounce the world and focus completely on Krishna service, then those duties can be put aside for the sake of Maham Ekam Sharanam Vraja. So that is Sharanam Vraja. It is actually referring to surrender in the mood of Vrindavan. And Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami. So Krishna is assuring over here that if any papa comes in the soul process, if somehow some sinful activities do happen, do not worry. I will protect you from all those sinful reactions. And how will Krishna protect from the sinful reactions? That he has demonstrated through the gopis, Leela, and they will demonstrate in many other ways. So one example of another example in Vrindavan is of Krishna protecting the Vrijavasis during the Govardhan Leela. Of course, there are no sinful reactions there actually, because they were simply doing a higher dharma. But here we are talking about any problems that come up. So sinful reactions are used to represent problems. Whatever problems may come up, I will protect you from them. So Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo. So the word Sarva comes twice in this verse, and generally speaking in writing, it is one of the guides for writing is never make blanket statements. For example, if we say all abortions are simply the result of uncontrolled lust, if I say that, now all, I say that now sometimes some women may have been raped, so the lust is not on their part, they are the victims. And the lust was the victimizers, not the victims. So we can't just say that in a blanket way that say all abortions are because of the uncontrolled lust of the people in general. So it may not be the lust of the woman at that time. So the point here is, in general it is said in writing that blanket statements where you use all, every, 100%, they are always to be treated with suspicion. Because there can be some exception which will prove that what we said earlier was not correct. So Krishna is emphasizing over here there are no exceptions. Give up all varieties of religion and I will protect you from all sinful reactions. So in both ways he's saying that no exception. That sarva coming twice is very significant, because in the absolute truth makes a promise, that promise is absolute, that promise is not relative. And Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami. Now earlier Krishna has said in the Gita that in 7.29 that Yesham Tvantagatam Papam Janaanam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Mama Drudhamrataha. He says, you can do my Drudhabhajan, Bhajan, you can practice devotional service determinedly when you are becoming, you become free from all sinful reactions. So, but as the Bhagavad Gita progresses, Krishna's compassion for Arjuna heightens. The mercy becomes greater, just like when two people have a heart-to-heart discussion, just spending that time together brings them closer to each other. So similarly, here, bringing the two of them closer, the conversation brings both of them closer to each other. Of course, they are all very intimately related as devotee and Lord. But there is always the intensification of devotion that happens. So there Krishna is sort of giving conditions. But here he is saying, whatever situation you are in, you just surrender to me and I will free you from sinful reactions. So the idea is that sometimes a parent may, as a child is growing up, the parent may train the child, mother may train, when you want to respond to nature, you should go to the washroom. And the child is a little bit silly and careless, and the child just soils his clothes. So then the mother gets annoyed and she says, first clean yourself, don't come to me till you have cleaned yourself. So that is 7.29. But then the child looks at mother helplessly and, mama, I don't know how to clean myself. And the mother, love overflows in her heart, says, come, I will clean you. So it is like that. When the devotee surrenders, sharanam, then Krishna says, aham to aham sarupa apebhyo. Krishna, I don't know how to free myself from sinful reactions. I'll just, please help me. I'll surrender to you. Krishna says, come, I will free you from sinful reactions. Aham to aham sarvapapebhyo mokshayishyami. So sarvapapebhyo is all sinful reactions. And how does Krishna protect? He has his own ways, but essentially machitta sarvadurgani matrasadat tarishyati. The remembrance of Krishna that comes, that can enable us to break free from the sufferings that come because of those reactions. Sufferings may come in themselves, but they don't have to cause suffering to us. You know, as we say something like that, pain may be unavoidable, but suffering is avoidable. Pain may come at a physical level, but suffering is a mental level. If our mind is absorbed in Krishna, we can transcend that suffering. And of course, Krishna frees us from any sinful reactions also. So Krishna's protection is at various levels. He protects us from sinful reactions, he protects us from the effects of sinful reactions, and most importantly, he protects us from sinful desires. And in this way, he enables us to transcend all worldly situations and continue steadily and return back to him. And actually, this is quite a challenging call to any person. Give up everything and just come with me. Sometimes in movies they show that when, say, a boy and a girl love each other, so the boy may tell to the girl, but the family members are opposing. So at that time, you know, the family members are opposing, maybe the two people are from somewhat different cultures and the society is not there, so then maybe the boy will tell to the girl, you know, you just leave everything and come with me. And we will start a new life somewhere else. We'll begin from scratch. And then if there is hesitation, he says, don't be afraid, come with me. So in a sense, you know, Krishna is our Lord. We are all constitutionally, we are all like his maid servants. We are all his meant to be his devotees. So Krishna is talking about a spiritual world, and in the material world there may be so many oppositions to what we are trying to do, from our own body and mind, from our acquaintances, from the world. So Krishna is telling that, Ma, should you just come with me from the material world to the spiritual world? Do not fear, I will protect you. So this whole idea of giving up everything else for the sake of love, it appeals to the human heart in a very deeply resonant way. And that appeals because that is what love essentially is at the highest level. So when it is left, when it is expressed at the material level, there may be authentic love also, but it is not long lasting, even if it is authentic. Sometimes it is just lust masked together, but even if it is authentic love, it is not long lasting. And that's why the love of this world ultimately ends in disappointment and bereavement. But when that same principle, we understand where it originates from. It originates from Krishna, and if I surrender to Krishna, then I get the supreme happiness by surrendering to Krishna. And that's why this is. So this is actually giving up everything else so that love can reign supreme. So this is the verse that essentially talks about that. And now, after describing this, Krishna will describe what is the glory of this knowledge. So next few verses are like Falashruti. And in this Falashruti, there is this mercy which comes descending down. So first he says, one who shares this message with everyone else, that person is glorious. And then he will, before that first he gives some caveats, some cautions. So let's look at that verse and then we'll move forward. So, idam tena tapaskaya na bhaktaya kadachana na cha shushrushave vachana cha mamyo abhyasuyate. So he's telling that don't give this knowledge to those who are not austere, tapaskaya, na bhakta, those who don't have devotion, cha shushrushave vachyam, those who do not render service, and cha mamyo abhyasuyate, that is, used in an emphatic, conclusive sense to end. Especially don't give it to the envious. Why? It is not that Krishna wants to hide this knowledge, but the envious, when they hear about his glories, their envy will simply increase. And rather than becoming attracted to Krishna, they will become further alienated from him, thinking that Krishna is simply bragging. So Krishna doesn't want the good of everyone, and doesn't want any further harm to come to anyone. That's why he's saying, don't give the knowledge to them. Now, but we may think that if we include these four categories, tapaskaya, bhaktaya, shushrushaya, bisuyati, then who is left over here? As we were saying, there's nobody left. But actually the mood of this verse is something much deeper. Actually, a father may have a huge amount of treasure for his children, but he may feel the children are not yet mature, and children may, if they get that money, they will just spend it arbitrarily, whimsically, and they may not value it. So the children have to grow up. Now, when people are small, they just value chocolates. When a child values chocolate, the child may not even understand what a jewel is. But if the child grows up, then the child understands what is a jewel, and giving the child the jewel at that time is proper. So, Krishna, when all these four characters, na tapaskaya, na bhaktaya, na shushrushave, na abhisudhi, indicate that people are not yet spiritually grown up. So, you cannot give the highest jewel to them. So, it is not that no knowledge should be given, but the highest knowledge of bhakti should be gradually given so that people can value it. Don't throw pearls to a swine. If you give too much valuable things to people who are unqualified, they misunderstand it and misuse it, and they will harm themselves instead of benefiting themselves. Yet sometimes when a son acts very responsibly and pleases the father and shows his love to his father by dedication, then the father may take the son to the innermost part of the treasury and tell the son, just show him, see, these are the jewels that I have, and these are all meant for you. So then, so those two jewels in the heart of Krishna are 65 and 66. Krishna gives those jewels to Arjuna, and then the father has the affection, veils of affection that have arisen in the heart, which made him share those jewels with the son, the subside. And that time the father may say, okay, please don't tell this about this to your other sons, to your other brothers and sisters, don't tell it to other people. Why? Because all that treasure is meant for them ultimately, right now they are not yet mature. So that is the mood of this verse. It is not to keep something secret for the sake of secret. It is to give people knowledge according to what they will be able to value it. And then Krishna says, but this knowledge actually is ultimately meant for everyone. And he indicates that by the next three verses. So first he will say, please share that knowledge with others. So somebody will say, to preach and to share this knowledge, that's very difficult. I say, okay, if you can't do that, then at least study this knowledge. So 68 to 69 is share, 70 is study. And somebody say, it requires so much hard work to study, I can't do that. And somebody say, okay, at least hear, just sit and hear. So Krishna is sort of extending the rope of mercy down. Somebody has fallen in a well, and you throw the rope and tell him, okay, stretch your hands up and hold on to the rope, and I'll pull you out. So he says, I can't do that, stretch my hands and all that. And then you throw the rope down further and further. And then the person says that, okay, now is it easier? Another rope has come right up to you. Just hold on to it. No need to stretch your hands and to stretch your muscles. I'll do everything. No, I can't do that also. Okay, then I'll throw down a rope with a lasso around it. And all that you have to do is just tie that rope around your waist, and I will pull you up. So, like that, the mercy comes down on. First is preach. If you can't preach, study. If you can't study, then at least hear. So in this way, we see Krishna's mercy manifesting in extraordinary ways. So, ya idam paramam guhyam. This is the most confidential knowledge. Paramam guhyam. Krishna is again, actually, guhya tamo, what he is expressing earlier, he is expressing over here. Mad bhakteshva abhidhasyati. That I will. Did you speak this to my devotees? Those who are devotionally minded. You remember, Madhyamadhikari discriminates in the Prem Maitri Krupopeksha. So those who are envious, don't give it to them. But to all others, you can give. So there are devotees, there are potential devotees, there are envious. And bhaktim mai param kritva mame vaishatya sanchaya. So this para bhakti is a very significant word over here. Where the word para with the word bhakti has been referred to this compound, or this word combination has come only once in the Bhagavad Gita till now. And that is in 18.54. when Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakamshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So the aspiring transcendentalist, after practicing Karma Yoga, after practicing Jnana Yoga, after coming to the Brahman platform, will then attain Parabhakti. But Krishna is saying that result, which comes after the perfection of Brahman realization, that result can be had just by those who share my message with others. So, and he is saying, Bhakti Mai Param Krutva, is that you will do perform transcendental devotional service to me, and Maamai Vaishyate Asaham Chayah, you will also come back to me. So this is a very strong guarantee Krishna is giving. And somebody, sometimes when we are the close friend, in the moment of intimacy, we make a big promise. And if I become a millionaire, I will give $500,000 to you. Somebody may say like that. So is that a sentimental promise like that? Now you make it in the height of sentiments, and then afterwards the friend comes and he says, no, I didn't mean that. You know, it was just sentiments. It's not like that. So Krishna reassures that in the next verse. Nachitasman manusheshu kashchin me priyakrittamaha bhavita nachame tasman anya priyataro bhuvi. So nachitasman manusheshu, there is no one more dear to me than kashchin me priyakrittama. There is no one more dear to me, and not only that, it is not that this is a sentiment which will go away. He says, in the future, there will be no one more dear to me. So, now this Kashchin me priyakrittamaha. There is no one more dear to me means that there can be many as dear to me. But there is no one more dear. So, the idea is that in spiritual level, in spiritual life, there can be many bests. The many superlatives are possible. So Krishna is saying that all the devotees who share Krishna consciousness with others, they are all dear to me. And although the Brihad Bhagavata Amrita differentiates between, say, various devotees according to their rasa. Madhura rasa, I describe how they are highest, and Gopkumar is not satisfied anywhere else except till he reaches Golok Vrindavan. Now that is in terms of rasa. But in terms of tattva, all devotees are dear to Krishna. And all devotees who are in the spiritual world, they are pure, they are purely devoted to Krishna, and they are fully loved by Krishna. So, Anya Priyataro Bhuvi, Krishna is saying that there is no one more dear to me. And actually, these two verses illustrate how much Krishna loves his preachers, and we can just imagine how much Prabhupada will be dear to him. Because what Srila Prabhupada has done to share Krishna's message. Nabhuto Nabhavishyati. No Acharya has done in the past, and no Acharya can do in the future. The mission of sharing Krishna consciousness to all the world, that only one person can do that. You know, then starting a movement and spreading it all over the world. Now others can may solidify it, deepen it, share it more and more. But Srila Prabhupada has done unprecedented. And it is through his mercy that we understand the Bhagavad Gita and we understand Krishna. Then Krishna said, at least study it. Adhishyate chaya imam. Adhishyate chaya imam. Dharmyam samvadamavayo. Dharmyam samvadamavayo. Jnana yagyena tenaham. Jnana yagyena tenaham. Ishtasyamiti me matihi. Ishtasyamiti me matihi. So, ishtasyam. He says that I am being worshipped. Ishtaha. So, Ishta Devata, the dear God. So, Ishta means to worship. So, Adeshyate Chaimam. So, those who study this conversation of ours, they are Jnana Yagya. The word Jnana Yagya has come several times in the Bhagavad Gita. 9.15, Jnana Yagya na Chapya, Nijanto Maam Upasate. There, the word Jnana Yagya largely refers to impersonal worship. But here, the whole context is devotional. Here, the idea is Krishna. You connect Jnana Yagya with Ishtasyam. That Jnana Yagya is a way of worshipping me. See, normally, worship we often consider that somebody is doing aarti, that is worship. So, you have aarti paraphernalia, you have diya, and you have agarbatti, you have flowers which you offer aarti to Krishna. So, Krishna is telling that actually, when you study my message, you are worshipping me with your intelligence. So, intelligence is the paraphernalia, and we are worshipping Krishna with the paraphernalia of the intelligence. So in that sense, studying the Bhagavad Gita is not merely an intellectual activity. It is a devotional activity. So, if some people study it divorced from the devotional message of the Gita, And those people who don't have either the intention to practice it, or if they have the intention to deny or downplay the message of the Gita, then that may not be devotional service. But those who have either open-mindedness or better still devotional intention, and then they study the Bhagavad Gita, then that is actually worship of Krishna with the interventions. And Srila Prabhupada gave different answers at different times, but one time Srila Prabhupada was asked, if you're all alone on an island, left alone, which book will you keep with you? Prabhupada said, I'll keep Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is not just a preliminary book. We sometimes use that Bhagavad Gita is like the graduation, and Bhagavatam is like post-graduation, and CC is like the doctorate. Yes, as far as gaining specific information about the various aspects of Krishna, it's true. In Bhagavad Gita, remember I mentioned, Bhagavad Gita tells us the identity of God, Bhagavatam tells the activity of God, and Chaitanya tells us the mentality of God. So we know who he is, what he does, and how he thinks. So there's a progression in that. But once we know Krishna, then actually the same sweetness and the beauty of Krishna that is there, that can be felt through any manifestation of Krishna, including the Bhagavad Gita also. And not just the Prabhupada, Sri Sacharya has also commented in the Bhagavad Gita quite extensively. And we discussed Baldev Devosh's verse. Baldev Devosh said that actually this Bhagavad Gita is Shadaishwarya Purna. This Krishna is all attractive, Bhagavad Gita is all attractive. And Shankaracharya used the word Amba to refer to. Amba is mother. The Bhagavad Gita is mother. And she gives the nectar of wisdom to all of us. So he said, this is studying the Bhagavad Gita is a form of worship. And then he will describe that if you can't study, at least here. Shraddhavananasu yascha. Shrunuyadapiyonaraha. Sopi mukta shubha loka. Prapnuyat punya karmana. So Krishna says that those who faithfully, non-enviously hear me, shrunuyat, those who are on this earth, naraha, tepi muktaha, they will become liberated. Liberated of what? All inauspiciousness. Shubha lokan. It's not that exactly they will attain liberation, but it is described Shubha lokan, they will attain the auspicious planet. So the Acharya described that this is referring to not just heavenly planets, because Krishna has already said that heavenly planets are for those who deviate from bhakti. But he is saying this is Shubha lokan, refers to planets like Dhru loka, where the Lord is present. Although it is in the material world, going there means to be in the proximity of the great devotee Dhruva and the Supreme Lord who is there with him. And from there, one has very high chance of going back to the spiritual world. So in this way, studying the Bhagavad Gita enables us to get all these benefits, just if we hear it. Now when Krishna completes this, then he asks Arjuna a question. So just read the question, then we'll conclude for it. Kachid etat chutam partha tvaye kagrena chetasaha ikagrena chetasaha kachid agyana sammoha pranashtaste dhananjaya. So have you, Arjuna, heard this with concentration, with attention? Because to understand the Bhagavad Gita, it's complex, so we have to be attentive, only then we can understand it. So ekagrina chetasa. So why is asking ekagrina chetasa? Actually, you know, if you ask me, are you attentive, are you hearing me? So we may ask that because we are concerned that the other person should understand what we are saying. If the person doesn't understand, the Bhagavad Gita is ultimately like a roadmap. If I am describing a map by which somebody can come to meet me, the person has not understood the map, the person will get lost. But do you understand what I am saying? Am I clear? So have you heard clearly? It's a matter of concern. Are you attentive? Or were you, because of grief or fear or lament or any other emotion, were you distracted? Or were you able to hear? And then, it's one thing to hear. Second, another thing to understand. So have you understood it? If you have understood, the result will be Agyan Sammoha Pranashtas, that your illusion and your ignorance, they will be destroyed. So what is the difference between Agyan and Sammoha? Agyan means not know, and illusion means to Maya, that which is not, to know something else to be the right thing. Agyan Sammoha. So actually Agyan is ignorance, illusion is misunderstanding. So they are both bad, but illusion is even more, is even worse. If I am blind, that's bad. But if I am blind and I imagine that I have eyes, that's worse. I imagine I can see, I am only thinking that I can see, I will just bang into a wall, I fall off a stair, I'll walk off a parapet of a terrace, all things can happen. So, you know, there is the Avritmika Shakti and Avarnatmika Shakti and Prakshipatmika Shakti. So, Avarnatmika Shakti covers us, that causes Agyan.